Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. I am Shane Bacon, joined by Max Homa. Max, we got podcast breaking news. Is that fair?
It's like mini breaking news, like a little bit of breaking news. Like we chipped news, not quite broke it, but it's, you know, cracked a little bit.
So share what's going down PGA Championship week.
Yeah. So Bones, the legend Bones McKay, is caddying for me. I know he's been doing a couple stints here and there. He caddied for JT a bit, caddied for Matt Fitzpatrick, I think at last year's. One of the majors, maybe, and he will be caddying for me next week in Kiowa at the PGA Championship. It's actually a really funny story. Joe qualified for the four ball, and I had told him, he said that the Charles Schwab, I think, was that week that he told me that the Charles Schwab was that week. I promised him, you know, if you qualify, like, I'll either take the week off, or I'll just find somebody else, like no big deal at all. And he's like, cool. And of course he goes out there and qualifies with my buddy, Johnny, who's my old roommate, and, super stoked and everything's all good. And I think Solly was the first person from No Laying Up who texted me and was like, hey, you know, Joe's, tournament is the week of the PGA. What are you going to do? And I'm like, no, it's not. It's the week of the Charles Schwab. He already told me. And then, you know, Solly being much smarter than all of us, and obviously, especially now, Joe was like, no, man, it's not. So Joe had seen the schedule and did not realize that the first 2 days were the PGA Championship weekend. So essentially, if I were to miss the cut, he could go with no prep. But he was going to be gone that next week. So, or actually, no, wait, am I messing that up? No, the first two weekends are this week, right? Am I completely butchering this? Whatever, doesn't matter. They overlap. The Saturday, Sunday before, whatever. So that's what it is. It's the first 2 days are this weekend. And then if they made the cut, like, you know, he obviously wouldn't be able to come. So, I didn't know that Bones was going to caddy at all. I think so. Joe and then Joe Skovrin, I'm imagining my Joe was a bit freaked out because I don't have a caddy for a major, which, you know, for anybody listening, that's not good. So by the, when he did come up and tell me, hey, you know, I messed up, he was like, don't worry, me and Skov already have a backup for you. Bones said he'd caddy. And I was like, wow. I was like, can we do this, you know, every week? Like,
right. Is this
can you always bring me news like this? No, I'm just playing. But super, super fortunate. I've gotten to know Bones out at Whisper Rock in Arizona. Bones is one of, like, truly the nicest, greatest people I've ever been around. Not saying that Joe, I have the utmost respect for Joe's caddying. And I mean this in not a slight at all. So please believe me when I say that. But it will be really cool to be around someone like Bones, who, you know, quote unquote, is like, you know, a real caddy, kind of. You know, I feel like Joe kind of has learned his way into this. Not that Bones didn't, but Bones has been doing this for forever. He's been on the bag for, you know, a bunch of majors and major champions, and he's just kind of seen it all. Ryder Cups, President's Cups, you know, he's just like probably one of the best minds in golf, I would imagine. So it'll just be cool for me, and then even going forward for Joe, that to be able to kind of like share what Bones does that I'm sure we don't, maybe some things we're lacking, things we can tweak. So I think that's really exciting, and it'll just be cool to hang with Bones. Like I said, he's a good dude. He's fun to be around. You know, he's somebody that I trust without even having done any of this before. So I'm really excited about that. Joel Damon completely screwed it up. I was going to announce it on here as a little like surprise. Not that, you know, it's like, you know, like I said, it's not breaking news, but it's kind of cool. And then he went out there and tweeted about it today, and then texted me later saying, man, I think I kind of stole the thunder there. I said, no, it's all good. Like, you know, you don't need to ask. Just go ahead, fire away. But no, it's cool. I'm really looking forward. It kind of is almost, not that I wouldn't have been excited, but it's almost even like a bigger jolt of excitement going into next week. It feels It feels like something, I don't know, as a kid, like you know, kind of dream of those kinds of situations where Bones or Stevie Williams or Fluff or the people you see with like the Tigers and the Phil Mickelsons of the world, you see them on TV all the time. You wonder what that must be like. So it'll be a really cool experience.
Does it at all make you not nervous, but are you, I know you're probably not going to get these feelings till you actually get to the event, you get on the tee on Thursday, but is there any feeling of kind of like, I need to show up a little bit for you because Bones is such a legend in terms of caddying and being around the game and stuff?
Yeah, 100%. But I think what's actually going to help me there and get me over that was, so when Joe first worked for me, you know, that was kind of his first time caddying. He caddied for Chapel a little bit here and there, but really, like, I think only one or two events. And then once we split and he went with Chap, you know, they played amazing. They had a bunch of runners up and finished, was in the final group a bunch, won Valero, played a President's Cup. Like, you know, I think Chap was probably like around 20th in the world.
Right.
And, you know, they were just seeing all kinds of stuff I had still never even seen myself. So when Joe ended up coming back on the bag, I remembered the first couple weeks feeling very intimidated. Like, anytime I felt like I didn't hit a shot pure, I felt like, you know, he was judging it based off of what he's seen. I mean, gosh, they not only Kevin Chappell getting to see top 20 player in the world, one of the best ball strikers, you know, I've been around, but he's also with Jason Day all the time and Dustin Johnson and Kisner all the time. And all of a sudden I felt like quite a bit of like unnecessary pressure, and it was all self-imposed. And I remember I don't remember if I mentioned it to him, but I think I brought it up and was like, man, like, I don't know how to explain this. Like, it's kind of weird, but like, I feel like you've seen a lot of great golf and now all of a sudden you're with me and I feel like the need to play. And, you know, of course he was like kind of taken aback a little bit by that, if I remember right. And he was, you know, kind of like, yeah, dude, that's not really like that thing. Not everybody is just, you know, you can't just become a top 20 player in the world. You can be a top player, 20 player in the world and be 100th in the world. If you think about it, you know, you're going to grow into that at some point. So, you know, that's kind of what I had to get over. So I think that'll help a little bit. I feel way more comfortable nowadays with my game. I know who I am, and I don't think I need to go out there and prove to Bones that I'm good.
Right.
So,
right.
I think I'll be over that. Plus, if you're trying to chase, you know, Phil Mickelson in a week's time, a career of his in a week's time, I think you're going to be, you're going to come up short, even if you win by 40. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely, like, gives me a bit of butterflies thinking about that. But at the same time, you know, having, you know, my game mixed with, you know, his obviously experience and expertise, you know, that should be more exciting than intimidating, I guess.
It's a hell of a pit play, bro. I mean, this is probably going to be a story, maybe a couple, you know, who is Bones caddying for at the PGA? I mean, it's not, you know, I mean, this isn't breaking the pip, but it's at least, you know, it's, again, you're going to get clicks. This will get some SEO.
Yeah, I've mentioned before, I'm not exactly optimistic on this pip thing. I've kind of I've given up. You got to
already. You can't already give up.
Oh, yeah. I promise you, I won't say it on here, but I know some of the numbers, and it's I saw the top 10 from I guess last year they had an article or whatever, and they put out the top 10, and Adam Scott was one of the 10. I'm not sure I've ever seen Adam Scott in anything other than the golf course. So I'm not so sure that my little bit of a Twitter following and my jokes will really carry me too far. But at the very least, it'll be fun content. We'll be able to talk about it on the podcast and hopefully come home with that is like the biggest trophy ever. And, you know, it'd be nice to try to find some space for that back at the house.
I still remember when Rory lifted it in 14, and, you know, Rory was like peak Rory jacked, you know, when he just was like ripped up. And I remember he took a breath before lifting the Wanamaker, and I kept thinking, was it like 100 pounds? Like, what does this thing weigh? You know, if Rory's struggling to get it over his head, you know, it's probably not the lightest of trophies. But yeah, I will say winning the PGA would help the situation in the PIP world. It would help a lot of situations. Not like you need a lot of help in 2021, but I mean, you know, this is breaking news. So winning the PGA championship would definitely help in terms of interest in and around the Max Homa world.
Yeah, the PIP is definitely, I'm starting to realize, is more golf based than it is.
It's more performance based.
It's more. It should be the performance impact program. But speaking of Rory, I want to talk about him. Obviously, won last week at Wells Fargo. He freaking owns that place three times now. He's won there. It's a cool year. I know his, you know, struggle, quote unquote, hasn't been, you know, quite like Jordan Spieth, but having him and Spieth like winning this year back in like the mega limelight, if you will,
right,
has been great, I think, for golf. And it's great for all of us to see, I think, just because it's exciting, you know, when we get our super superstars vibing like they have been. But I don't know what it is about Rory. There's nobody I feel like more aesthetically pleasing to watch play the game. Like, you have someone like Dustin, who I think almost makes golf look mundane and
right, exactly,
basic when he's getting going. Rory still has that. There's something about the way he plays that there's still enough flair in
it's emotional.
Yeah, it's emotional, and he can make the game, don't get me wrong, look incredibly easy, but I don't know what it is. There's something about it to my eye that is just more, it just really gets, you need all those characters, right? In golf, you need someone like Dustin, you need someone like Rory, you need someone like Jordan, who, you know, Jordan seems to have the it where the ball always wants to go in, very similar to Justin Thomas. You need somebody like a Brooks Koepka who seems to be more of like the athlete competitor than he is like the golfer. So you need all those people. So when we get all of them kind of popping, it's really fun. But I was curious your take. You know, I was thinking about, first off, everybody kind of saying, oh, Rory's out of his slump. And like, obviously the slump is super relative, but it was a bit of a, for him, it is shocking when he doesn't win on a yearly basis. I know golf is hard, but that's just like a really, it just seems like he lucks his way into a win. And by luck, I mean like his game clicks for a week, you know, it should, 1 week out of 52 a year where he'll dominate. He's that good. You look at Dustin, you know, having that rough summer, but then he comes out and just has a week where it just clicks and he shoots 30 under par. So it's just like those guys, you just need a little bit of a spark from week to week. So it's shocking when he does have a bit of a downward year as far as not winning. But I was just curious, you know, we talk so much about him, and he's obviously had you know, quite a few wins and a handful of majors. I'm curious your thoughts on where his legacy is gonna be when all is said and done, and you can kind of you know, add in maybe some more wins if you think that he'll have them, but like where he kind of stacks up to you, because I do think he gets a ton of credit for the potential, quote unquote, like one of my least favorite words,
right?
But when you watch him hit, it's just, he is different. He is a different golfer. We do not see this. I don't know if we will see more than, you know, another couple guys that play like him. Now some might win more, but I don't think we're going to see a ton of people who play like him very often. So curious where you think his legacy kind of stacks up. Does he get, you know, kind of the brunt of, man, he should have won more, or does he get the brunt of, you know, man, or the good end of it, where it's like, you know, four majors is a ton of majors, maybe some more. You know, obviously no Masters might not help that, but curious your thoughts on Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, it was interesting. It's interesting you brought up Rory. We talked at length today on Golf Today about it. I actually was talking to Damon before we started the show, and I asked him, who is your favorite golfer to watch when he's playing his best? Like, who's the most fun when they're really locked in? And I think there's two answers, and that's it. And I think it's Rory and Spieth. You know, Rory, because it's so majestic when he's locked in, and Spieth because it's the complete opposite of that. You know, I mean, I'm not to take away from Jordan Spieth's abilities, but I just feel like when Jordan Spieth shoots 65, it was like work to shoot 65. And, you know, Rory, at times you're like, how do you not shoot 65 every time? I think Rory's legacy at this point is, you haven't, to your question, I think it's, you haven't won more. And I use this analogy on Golf Today. I said, you know, for Rory, it's like LeBron James. Like, you and I aren't texting each other, hey, LeBron won Western Conference Player of the Week. You know, like, we don't bring that up with LeBron.
Yeah.
You know, we might bring it up with a player we follow or we like, but in terms of LeBron, at this point, right, we're looking at MVPs and championships. And for Rory, what he did so quickly actually hurts the way we look at him. You know, I mean, his success hurts him now because he won those majors so quickly, right? He loses that Masters, he immediately wins the U.S. Open, blows everybody out of the water, the PGA, you know, wins that Open, wins another PGA. It's like he won these majors so quickly, It's been 23 majors, Max, since he won a major. I mean, that's so crazy to think for him. Jack went 20. Tiger went 28 between major wins. You know, Rory's at 23. It'll be 24 when he tees it up at the PGA Championship. And for Rory, you know, again, I mean, you know, heavy lies the crown. We look at the majors. I mean, he could win. He's won two FedEx Cups, right? He could win three more FedEx Cups. And to me, it doesn't necessarily change the way we look at Rory, the player, because at this point, when you get to where he's gotten, I feel like it's majors and that's it. And that does take away at times from the way he played this week. I mean, he played great at the Wells Fargo. It's a golf course that he's obviously very comfortable on. But it's like, I kind of, and I hate to be this way because I want to celebrate the good. But for me, it's like, okay, but like, what are you going to do at this PGA? Because obviously you found something that works. Will it actually translate into the majors? Because it's just, you know, it's either been that opening round where he's taken three steps back and had a claw his way back into the tournament, or he'll get there over the weekend and we see him not quite have the game to kind of get it done. So I think that at this point, if you polled golf fans, they'd probably say we expected more from Rory, which again, to your point, is crazy, dude. He's won four majors. He's won all over the world. He's won a ton. I just think we expected maybe Rory was going to be that next guy that would win seven, eight, nine majors, which, I mean, you know it. You're out there. Are we going to have anybody do that? Like, is there going to be a person that gets to eight majors in this era?
Yeah, I find that interesting. And I kind of, as a golf fan, I feel the same way. But I also I've been trying to look at it in like a comparison and make sense of it, because Dustin Johnson is someone who's won less majors.
Right.
But DJ's won more, you know, PGA Tour events, and he's definitely probably had a bit more. DJ's probably the most consistent golf career I can think of anybody ever. Like maybe not Phil. Phil's up there and Jack Nicklaus or whatever. But I would say in my generation, maybe generation before, he's pretty darn close to the most consistent. He wins nearly every year. He hasn't really ever had a down, like a dry spell in golf. He's had like a month, but he hasn't had anything where you're like, where has Dustin Johnson been? However, he hasn't won really very many majors compared to, you know, even Rory and Brooks, you know,
and Jordan,
kind of been racking them up a little bit better, and Jordan. So, now what's interesting is Rory's game gets picked apart. Like we talk about it, not we, you and I, but the golf media talks about it all the time. You know, Rory's wedge game's not good enough. Maybe his putting's not good enough, unless you ask Brad Faxon, and maybe the worst putting list I've ever seen in my life. Like all
of
these
things. I had that for later in the episode.
Okay, we can talk about that. I hated that list. But we talk, you know, we pick him apart, and Dustin doesn't really get picked apart at all with his game. At all is the wrong way, but not nearly like Rory. Like,
absolutely.
We don't talk about the things he needs to improve on. So it's so weird when you think about that, because Rory's dominated majors for a couple years. And I do think part of this is the Tiger's kind of ruined major stuff for golfers. Like even you saying, is he going to get to seven, eight or nine majors? Yeah. He quote unquote should have, but winning those things is so hard. The fact that Hideki just won his first major is someone who's been around him since we were an amateur golfer,
right,
is like shocking, because he's just a machine. And you look at Jordan, who's only won three, and I know he's young, but you would think he'd have so many. And Justin Thomas, who is the only person I'd add to your list of the your and Damon's list of the two most exciting people, I think Justin has that it factor, just the one that it's not tangible, but there's just something about when he's playing really well that's just insanely fun to watch. Like I said, he has the short game and the wedge game where the ball just likes to go in. His highlight reel is, I think, as steep as anybody's highlight reel. It just has everything you can imagine. It's very Tiger-esque. So, but JT has one major, and it's just like, you know, Brooks has been the only guy who seemed to be able to rattle him off. And he obviously seems to, like, as I mentioned before, he's the athlete of the golfers. He's the competitor. It seems like that's his persona. So it's like when the event gets the biggest, you know, the toughest, you know, strongest type of golfer comes out, and that's where Brooks kind of carries, you know, he wears the crown. So, but it's just so interesting looking at Rory, where a lot of people just say it's kind of incomplete, even though he's still so young. But Dustin kind of, like, you know, he doesn't get picked apart. And I don't think that either of them deserve to at all. They're both tremendous. But I just think that there's something funny about that majors talk that we always have, that, you know, that we expect the greatest golfers to have so many of them. And they just, you know, getting over five majors is pretty insane.
Right.
The only thing I would say with Rory's that I as someone trying to be rational would be, like, perplexed by is if he never won a Masters, because it just doesn't make sense. I would say that for the top guys, not for me, not for Joel, not for, you know, the guys who you know, would be, I guess, a little bit more excited just to win a regular tour event, winning majors where that is, you know, how they kind of, I guess, weigh their careers. The Masters has to be the easiest one to win because so many guys are looking around just like happy to be there in a way, still competing. But I mean, your eyes get really big when you show up. And, you know, someone like a Rory, I know he's got the nerves and all the pressure, but he's past the point of how we feel, where it's just like getting to Augusta is such a, like, triumph, and it's a small field. And then top that off with the golf course fits him off the tee and ball striking wise, like, to it, like, as perfectly as you can fit somebody, I would imagine. Like, he has to feel like, when he, to his eye, it has to look really good to his ball flight he's always had. So that would be the only one where I'd be like, man, that'd be weird. But winning a US Open, winning a PGA, winning an Open Championship, like, that's, I don't care how good you are, like, rattling those off is brutal. Like I said, Dustin Johnson has two.
Right.
He is, DJ's, like I said, but probably the closest person to Tiger I can remember golf game wise. He doesn't have much, like, that ever really falters in his golf game. He makes it look dumb easy most of the time, even on weeks he doesn't win. So I don't know. It's just such an interesting, golf is such an interesting sport in that regard, because, like, when I tell people, if you're going to go to a PGA Tour event, the one thing I would always advise is, especially if it's your first time, is go watch Rory at least hit one drive or two drives, or sit on the range and watch him with drivers, because it is, like, mind-boggling. Like, it is the most amazing thing you'll ever watch in the game of golf, or at least that I've seen so far. So you look at somebody like that and then think, okay, well, now we're going to say that he hasn't won enough majors. And I mean, he's 32, I think. So, like,
right,
there's tons of time, but it is such an interesting, you know, whenever people like Rory have these little, like, blips in their career, it always just makes me think of how hard the game is and how much we expect people to win because of probably Tiger. Like, Tiger has really ruined that for us. It feels like you shouldn't have to play that well to win, because Tiger could just kind of some days, like, literally at the 08 Open, US Open, like, limp his way to a major. But I just think that it's just, like, maybe even more of a credit to Tiger and even more of a credit to the game of golf and the depth of professional golf, of just how hard that is to do, where you need to be on. Anybody can kind of get you at any point. You know, what is it? Rory's won, like, 17 times on tour worldwide or something like that.
I mean, right,
a ton. But you know, Tiger's won 82. Like, that's just, like, that's banana land. So I don't know. I just brought it up because I've been thinking about it ever since Rory won. Because, like I said, Rory's the guy that, like, I've always just been fascinated by. You know, his golf game is, like, as intriguing as it gets. His ball striking is stupid. And he just seems like a winner, but it's all like the Jordan thing. Jordan came out and it was, like, stupid easy for a while for him. It just seemed like anytime he showed up, he was going to have a chance. And then he has, like, this 2-year fall where it's like, he's still playing okay, but it's obviously not, like, up to his standard, but his standard was built by him, like, his own play that we all watch. So it's like, well, how, you know, are we just seeing that golf is harder than, you know, than we maybe gave it credit for? Or is it that, and golf is deeper, or is it like, oh man, he's really, like, fallen off? I don't know. It's always just an interesting topic for me.
So I think that it's funny because, you know, you were talking about the number, you know, I brought up 7 or 8. Does anybody get a kid 7 or 8? And so I was pulling up the list of major champions. So there have been 19 players that have won 5 majors or more. Okay, that's it, right? If you take Jack out and Tiger out at 18 and 15, you've got Walter Hagen at 11, so 4 back of Tiger, right? He finished playing golf. I mean, his winning span finished in 1929. You've got Hogan at 9. You've got Gary Player at 9. Tom Watson at 8, right, who was a more modern player. You got you know, Varden at seven, you know, his career finished in 1914. Bobby Jones finished in 1930. Sarah's in 35. Sam Snead, 54. Arnie, 64. Trevino had six. But like when you go through the list, and especially when you get in the group at four and five, there are a lot of players, you know, 1800s, early 1900s. On that list, there's not a lot of modern players that have actually done this. And I'm talking modern playing in their careers in the 80s. So when we look at this and we talk about Rory, and I've got to do this myself, at times we need to remind ourselves how impressive four is, right? Because there's not many people that have won four. And to your point earlier about Tiger and Jack, for that matter, they've changed the way we think about majors. And it's actually the opposite, where they're the outlier, right? And winning two or three majors as a great player is more the norm.
Yeah, and I also think that what kind of gets overlooked in this majors talk is the four majors are really, really different. And I think the reason very, very, very few people have won the career Grand Slam is because of the four, you know, different requirements you need to win. And like win all four of them. So like if you broke it down to one each major, that they're drastically different. So I don't care how in golf, I don't care how good you are. There's golf courses that don't fit, and there's styles of golf that don't fit very well. Again, we're going to cut out the Tigers and the Jacks of the world because they could clearly do whatever they wanted with a golf ball. But when you look at the Masters, I would say, I think that the biggest if we're going to go with like your game is on, you know, firing on all cylinders. For everybody, I think that the biggest issue with the Masters, it is the most press, it is the most pressure, it is the most media attention. Like, it is a lot on the extracurriculars outside of the game of golf. Then you look at the U.S. Open. I think the U.S. Open is the biggest grind, and it's like mentally draining on the golf course. It will just beat you up, and it's like who can kind of be the most patient with their game. Again, we're going to assume everyone's kind of firing on all cylinders, but I'll add that you typically have to hit the ball really, really straight around a U.S. Open. I know it's changing a bit now, so that's why I lean on kind of the patience, the grit, the all that. Then you go to the Open Championship, where golf is completely different. The ball's played on the ground. You get weeks where it is insanely windy, and you cannot hit the shot that, I mean, I'll just use Rory as the example. Rory hits the ball insanely high. You can't really play that shot for 72 holes and expect not to get bit. And then you go to the PGA Championship, which is usually, you know, a lot of people say it's like the easiest setup of the majors, which again, I like, because in general, that means it's asking another question. It's still crazy hard, but usually the PGA will set up where if you play well and you can go low. And if you don't, I guess the thing is people don't get to see enough, but like the PGA at Harding Park, like if you didn't play well, like I did, like you're just getting punished for 4 days. It's still harder than a normal PGA Tour event. It's firm. It's still like got all those things, but it does seem to allow for low scores for the guys who are playing some phenomenal, phenomenal golf. So I think that asks four things. So four questions. So to win a bunch of majors, you got to think, man, most people don't fit all four of those. I would say, like I said, maybe minus Tiger and Jack. Like, I don't think that many people fit all of those. So all of a sudden now, let's just say you're cutting it down to half. You're like very, astute at two of those things. Well, then you're only getting two of those chances a year to win the one that fits you.
Right.
And it's like, man, how hard is it then to accumulate eight? You have to win four of each, in a perfect world. And that's 8 years, 4 years minimum to do that. And that would be if you won it each time for 4 years, which obviously typically would never happen. Brooks is, you know, the first person, I think, and only person ever to win back-to-back U.S. Opens and PGAs. And that's in the history of the game back
right.
to, like you mentioned, like the 1800s. So I just think that it's undervalued how hard it is for your game to fit all these places. And I know the course has changed, but the test is usually quite similar. And, you know, you just look at a U.S. Open, even when it is more open and it's a different golf course, the test is usually similar. You need to make a lot of pars and really avoid doubles. And it's like, well, do you fit that? Because I think Rory's, the only knock I'd ever have on Rory's game ever, like across the board for his career, is he seems to get like complacent at times. So you would think, man, winning a U.S. Open would be quite difficult because, you know, he's the guy who'll miss like a tap in, you know, and it's just like, Rory, what are you doing?
But can't throw him away, right?
It's like, Yeah, we look at that like you just shouldn't do that. If it's like, dude, not everybody's made of the same makeup. Like, you know, some people struggle with that. Focusing for 72 holes is really, really hard. And it's like, okay, so he obviously has won a U.S. Open now. And he's won the PGA and he's won the Open. But like, if you're breaking it way down, like that U.S. Open that year was soft, and the 1 year, and then the PGA he won at Valhalla was a bit softer, and then the one he won at Kiowa was just, you know, insane golf on impossible golf course. Like that's one where I feel like that showed that he can kind of do it anywhere. But you got to think, like, all that stuff, the Masters, the beauty of it, the reason maybe why he hasn't had as much success or hasn't won there multiple times or whatever, which, like I said, I would have expected, is because this all, like, the more you don't win it as a great player, the harder it probably gets, because you must have to go through so much stuff, not only the week of, but leading up to it, of questions and anticipation and all that stuff. So winning majors is just, it's just underrated hard, because there's just, again, not very many opportunities. And then somehow all those forms of golf have to fit you. And I think they are drastically different. It's hard on TV to see it because you just see a golf course and you see great golfers. And you're like, well, that guy's got to fit this place. He's so good. It's like, yeah, well, it just doesn't always work like that. That's why I guess Augusta is the easiest one to predict, because we see the same course every year and you kind of know what you're getting into. But like, I mean, most guys don't know much about Kiowa coming up this next week. Like, you know, I barely remember watching it on TV, and, you know, I fortunately asked Bones like what to work on, but it's like, not a lot of people have a whole lot of experience there. It's not in a very easy place to get to. So I don't know. The whole majors thing is just like, it's just Tiger made it look just way too freaking easy. Jack Nicklaus has made it look way too easy. And I think everybody thinks if you're the best player, you should win on that golf course. And I just don't think that's the case, because I can use my own like career as an example, but I think I'm a very good golfer, but there's definitely a couple golf courses that I think I'm going to always play well on when my game is half decent. And then there's a couple golf courses where I think I'm going to need to play great just to have a half decent week. And like that's I'm talking about all PGA Tour events. So I don't think it's just always, hey, what's your world ranking? How good are you? Oh, you should play well here. Like, it just doesn't really work like that.
I have a question for you on Kiowa, and then I want to move on from Rory, but this is kind of Rory specific. And, you know, as a PGA Tour player, I just love your thoughts on this, because I brought this again up on Golf Today. Is, you know, I was just warning people, because, you know, Rory's the favorite now at the PGA, coming off the win, and I know, you know, betting odds and stuff are more about, you know, where people are placing their bets as much as it is about who actually they think might win the event. But, you know, 2012 was a long time ago. I wrote down a couple things today. You know, Colin Morikawa was 3 years away from going to Cal, you know, in 2012. I mean, that's how long ago this was. Do we in the media, like myself and anybody writing and all that, do we put too much emphasis on the way people played at past events when there was only maybe one or two championships held there? Do we put too much emphasis on that? Like, as somebody in this position like yourself, when you think back to a golf course you played well on 6 or 7 years ago and you show up there again, it's not like it instantaneously translates into good play again, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is a perfect time for this question, because last week at Wells Fargo, of course, I love, and I have played well in the past. Like, I showed up there and it was just like set up differently than the year I have won. The greens even have more grain in them. Like, they were faster. So like, so much of it is week to week based. I think, you know, for me, that's why the West Coast is good, because the weather is always quite similar each week. So it really feels like you're playing the same golf course each time. But you know, when we go to venues and like you go down, you know, a few year gap, I just think it's hard to say, oh yeah, he's going to love this place, because right. I mean, what if the wind direction's the opposite, you know, like what if the greens are soft and not firm? What if, you know, he caught lightning in the bottle that week? I know that's a bad example for the PGA, but like, there's just a lot that goes into it. So I don't think it's a bad question or a bad point, because I don't think there's any other way to use comparison and to, you know, kind of prep that, with, you know, a guess of who's going to play well, but it definitely just doesn't. I mean, your game has to also line. I think the hardest part about golf is the game has to line up. Like, right. You can't just go out there, again, Tiger excluded. Like, you can't just go out there and like find it or piece it together every time. Like, you watch these guys, you know, Cantlay was a great example at Augusta. I played with Pat on Monday, and then and he played unreal for 9 holes. Must have made like 4 or 5 birdies. And then on Tuesday, apparently he made another 5 birdies. And the next day he made another 5 birdies. And these are all 9 holes. He is playing the best golf in the world those 3 days. Like, I without even seeing everybody else, that was the best player there. And the first day he shot like 7 or 8 over. Your game needs to show up. And there's no – Patrick Cantlay is a well-established player. There's no nerves that like changed everything. There's no nothing. Like, the golf just didn't
wasn't there.
That's how I felt last week. I just wasn't there. Does it mean that it's not going to be there if I got to play Saturday? No, it probably would have been there maybe Saturday, but like, that's golf for you. You have to come out the gate going, and it's just like a lot of it's timing. So it's just so hard to hypothesize, oh, this guy's going to play well because he loved this place like few years ago. It's like, yeah, well, it might suit his eye, and I think that's, you know, one thing. You know, the course will probably suit that person's eye, which is definitely one variable taken out, because I have no idea if any of these holes are going to like look good to me. And I won't know if I can how to play certain holes. You know, there's certain shots that you get comfy with hitting off certain tees or into greens that maybe he can like, you know, people can like harken back on. But you know, at the same time, it's like, oh man, like, you know, this hole always requires this low cut, and that low cut just doesn't feel like it did that year that I played well here. And it's like, well, now it's impossible.
It's the practice round thing, Max, I sometimes laugh about. And I actually think, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like pros play less practice rounds now. I think there's a little bit more about conserving energy in early parts of the week. Is that close or no?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, so... But, you know, like, you can go play like you specifically, and I've played a lot of golf with you, and you, like, I think the first time we played Phoenix Country Club, you made 9 birdies. You know, you'd never seen the golf course before. You made 9 birdies. Like, your game showed up that day, right? You'd never seen it. You didn't know which way every hole was going to go until you got to the tee. And then you could go play a golf course that you play all the time, and you don't have the game that day, and you shoot 75, you know, and it's just that day the golf game wasn't there. The swing wasn't there. So, we look at these practice rounds, you look at the prep, you look at everything, Steph getting warmed up, you know, he makes 200 threes in a row, and you're like, man, he's going to have a game. But, you know, it's maybe a little different when the game starts, or he's not making the shots like he was, or he misses his first two. It's just, it's everything changes. It's the whole tennis versus ice skating in terms of tournament golf versus not tournament golf. That brings me to the U.S. Open this year, and unfortunately, I'm not going to be in the field at the U.S. Open. My game showed up for 9 holes in my qualifier this week, though, Max.
I know. I was looking forward to asking about this. So I saw your score. You kind of almost made it. I was pretty pumped for you because, you know, the last podcast we talked about it, you were not exactly spewing with confidence. So you clearly found a little something. And I don't know, how was the rush? Did you know, have a feeling what you needed to shoot? How did the round kind of play out?
Yeah, I felt so U.S. Open local qualifying, for people that don't know, I got through in 19. That was in Arizona. I shot 3 under there and got through on the number. I've heard and seen and looked up, you know, up here in the Northeast, you don't have to go as low in a lot of these qualifiers. And so my whole goal the whole day was to shoot under par. I said, if I shoot under par, I got a chance. You mentioned the confidence going into it. I kind of found some stuff. Like, I'd sent some videos to my instructor back in Arizona, Scott Sackett. I sent him a couple of videos throughout the weeks. Just like, you see anything, man? Like, I'm really lost. I'm hitting my iron so shitty, Max, that, you know, you just don't have any birdie looks. Like, I played 18 holes, one round. I played 18 holes, didn't make a birdie a couple of weeks ago. Then I played another round, didn't make a birdie. And it didn't feel like I was playing bad. It's just, I wasn't hitting it close enough to make any birdies, you know? And I get on the first tee, and it was fun, dude. It, like, I haven't had that rush, that tournament rush in a long time. And I played fantastic outside of one hole, really. I mean, I shot 2 over, I shot 73. I needed 70, so I missed by 3. But it kind of felt for a while like I was kind of gaming it, you know, where you're like, I know I don't have a lot right now, but like, I got to put something together. I got a couple of stories for you throughout the round, but I made a bogey on this incredibly long par three. I started on 10, made a lot of pars, hit some great putts that didn't go in, but you know, that's kind of how golf is, and made a bogey. And I'm like, all right, I need to get going. So I birdie 17, birdie 18, turn it one under. And then I really, and again, I mean, everybody, I mean, you could say this every round you play. I've played enough golf to see it in person, but you know, good players hit the hole a lot on 20 with 20 footers and 15 footers. And I was hitting the hole a lot. And it was, they weren't going in, but they were hitting the hole. So it's like you're rolling the ball well. I hit one of the better shots I've hit in a tournament in a long time. I hit this 3-wood on about my 12th hole from 275 just in the greenside bunker, but it almost landed on the green out of the rough. I had a couple moments. So I will say this, dude, I made the laziest mistake I've ever maybe made on the golf course, though. And I'm still a little bummed about it. I got to tell you. So I got my push cart, turning one under. And then there's a kind of a stretch on the front nine of these two kind of hard par fours in a row, the fourth and the fifth. And the fourth, there's just more trouble on four than any of the other holes on the golf course. So I hit my driving iron in the fairway. I've got like 150 in. I miss the green. I make bogey. So I'm even par, no big deal. The next hole goes right and the tee is left. So I push my cart up to the top. I grab 3-wood and 2-iron, walk to the tee, probably 150-yard walk. Get to the tee. One of the kids I'm playing with is playing well. He just made a birdie. He's got the honor. He hits driver. I probably hit it about 10, 15 past him. He hits driver, and the wind's a little into us. And where it lands, I was kind of surprised. Like, I thought it'd be way more up there. And so now I'm thinking to myself, shit, I wish I had my driver, you know? And I'm kind of sitting there going, do I run down the hill? You know, I'm next up. Like, do I run down and get my driver? And I'm like, it's fine. I'll just hit 3-wood. But of course, now I've got the doubt in my head. I kind of fan my 3-wood. I still think it's fine. But it was like there's a lake up the left side. I didn't realize that it kind of turned into a creek up the left side as well. I see it splash. Doesn't cover any ground. I've got to drop. Basically, it's like hitting it out of bounds. I mean, because there's nowhere to drop it. So I got to drop it like 40 yards in front. Hit it in the fairway. Hit on the green. 2-putt. Make double. And that was kind of it. And yeah, it was a. It was literally like, trying to explain this to Cindy, it was a mistake I made that wasn't a golf swing mistake. You know, it was just a being an idiot or not bringing my bag all the way to the tee mistake. And that is something I'll never do again. That was a bad move.
Yeah, those are the painful ones. And that's why the qualifier stories are so great, because that could never actually happen in professional golf. But it'll happen when you're carrying your own bag or pushing your own bag. And I think we've all done something to that extent where like you'll bring a couple clubs out of the cart to the back, you know, back tee and realize that, oh, six isn't enough, but I'm just going to turn it down and hook it. And you're like, well, I couldn't walk 12 seconds, right, 20 seconds worth to go get the right club. And then you end up kicking yourself more than if you would have just made a bad swing with the driver. It's the most frustrating stuff when we do like the mental mistakes.
Yeah. And that's the thing, dude, is I was telling Cindy, I said, man, I just would have liked to see me hit driver there. I had 4 or 5 holes left, had a couple par fives. It's like, you're even, you know, you're kind of where you wanted to be. You're in a good spot. And so that was a bit frustrating. One of the guys I played with did something I'd never seen before. I wanted to ask your thoughts on this because I'd never seen somebody do this. I'm assuming this is a teacher, a college coach thing. He was a great guy. Awesome dude. He would pull 2 irons out of his bag on par threes, but he knew what club he was going to hit. So he would just lean the club against his bag. And I got the sense that it was so you couldn't look in his bag and see what iron he was actually hitting. Have you ever seen somebody do that before?
That's pretty clever. I haven't seen that. I mean, granted, we don't, we have somebody obviously.
Well,
carrying,
I know, but like even
so
back in your junior golf days or anything like that. Yeah, I'd never seen.
We used to throw the towel over the bag.
Okay.
If we wanted to kind of throw people off the scent, I guess. But I mean, I respect the move. I've never seen a huge advantage in it. I don't know. When you're around golf as long as we have been, especially, I mean, at least speaking for myself, as long as I have been, I can kind of see, especially if I know ish what club you're hitting. Like I can tell you if you had a 7 or an 8 by the way it flew or by the way the club looked on the ground when you set up to the ball. So I guess it's probably doing a little more than you know,
overthinking the situation.
But I respect the idea. I mean, even in the slightest, if he did that, And, you know, maybe I start thinking about him doing it. Maybe that gets in my head almost a little bit. I don't know. But that's not a bad, I mean, there's no, you know, no reason not to. If you know, you're not only competing at the course, you are competing against other guys, especially in a, you know, competitive, you know, qualifier such as you have, where you're going to only play for one day. So I don't blame him. You know, there's no, it's not like it took any extra energy. So that's kind of a new move I hadn't thought of much before.
I was into it. I think I was very into it. I think it worked great in like a match play situation, right?
Oh, yeah.
If you had the honor and it's like, take two outs, set the one on the ground, you know, club down, grip against your bag. Nobody knows what it is. Anyway,
I have a funny story off that. Not quite the same, but in a first 2 years pro, Joe caddy for me. Then, like I said, we split. And then my first ever professional golf event where I did not have Joe on the bag was in Panama. And I go down there without a caddy. I get a local. He doesn't speak English. So we, you know, we were just kind of doing the carry the bag type thing. Not really, obviously, not talking much about the shots. And played practice rounds all good. I've played the course a bunch of times before. So I get, it's the first round. I hit my drive down the fairway. I'm pretty amped, you know, to get the season. It was the first event of the season. I was amped to get the season started. I get to the fairway and I go to look for a sprinkler head. And there's no numbers on them. And I'm like, oh, like immediately when I did that, my heart sunk and I realized all the work that caddying, you know, takes and like where I completely slipped up, where I just thought that all the numbers would be in the book. And on this particular golf course, they weren't. And sometimes they are in the book, but they're, you know, the numbers aren't exactly right. So now I am having a full-blown panic attack. I have to play 18 holes and I can only guess what number these heads are based off of how far I think I kind of am, or if I count them off. I don't know how to perfectly explain it, but like I think a lot of people have been there before.
So you have a yard, like you have a yardage book, but you don't know which,
and it has the numbers on it,
but you don't know which head it is, right?
On the head.
Right.
Yeah. So I hadn't marked the head. So now I'm fully panicking. I make the turn. I'm playing pretty nice. And I got to my 11th hole, number two in Panama. And I hit the ball down the fairway and the other guy in my group hit the ball down the fairway and I'm a little bit in front of him, fortunately. So I got to go second. And at this point there's so, you know, throughout the day, like it had been extra work, but I could figure out what head was what. I was clearly, you know, playing fine. Like I was figuring, I was added stress, but like it was fairly clear on some of them what the number was, which sprinkler head was which. And this particular hole, it just, I can't remember exactly why, but it's like all the heads were scattered and they were too close to each other and I just had no freaking clue how far I was, like not a clue in the world. So like I said, I'm a little bit in front of him, so I got to go after and I kind of moved my bag over towards them and I moved myself over towards them and stood by him and I heard him say I'm gonna hit an 8-iron and like a stock 8-iron to his caddy. And I'm kind of, you know not like I'm like, you know, in their ear, but I'm like close enough to hear, like it would be a par 3. So I hear him say that. And then, I just decided, I have no clue what number it is, but I just hit a 3/4 8 iron simply off of what he hit. And I remember I hit the green and 2-putt and I ended up getting through the round pretty good. And right after the round, I called, my buddy Mark, who was caddying for for Kevin Tway. And I said, Mark, you need to meet me at the hotel. I need to get your yards book. I clearly screwed up. It was one of the most stressful, like 4.5 hour days of my entire life.
Do you remember what you shot?
No, but I made the cut. I played pretty good.
Okay.
But that was not fun. True grind. Like every time you hit, your first thought was, how am I going to get this number fast enough? You know, I'm praying I'm near ahead that like I could figure out what it is. It is just a nightmare. So in that case, if that guy was hiding clubs, I'd have been dead.
you start like going around, like hitting it over by the other players. So you can get a read.
Pretty much.
He's in the right rough, but that's okay. I had a moment on the qualifier where I'll forever change the way I term a certain thing in golf. I was on the 8th hole of my day, the 17th. I was one over. I was, like I said, I was hitting it good, playing well. I hit my irons. I told you I was hitting my irons like crap. Hit my irons so freaking good. I hit them great on Monday. I hit them great yesterday. Irons are back, by the way, which I'm very excited about.
Irons are back. You should put some covers on those irons just in case.
I think I might have to keep them warm. So yeah. I play in 17. It's probably the longest par 4 at Shuttle Meadow, which was a great little course in Connecticut. I really liked it. long uphill par four. I hit my best drive of the day. I have gap wedge in. I hit it right over the flag, like 30 feet long. Not a big deal. It's kind of in a good spot. The greens are pretty slick. And so I get up there, I mark my ball, and there's a worm right next to my ball, like maybe 6 inches away. And it's just hanging out. You know, this worm's just having a day. And you know how you kind of try to pick a worm up by the back of your putter and then it just doesn't work? So I tried to scoop the worm. It wasn't going to work. And I'm like, all right, man, I look at the worm and in my head, I don't say this out loud. I want the players to think I'm totally a weirdo. But in my head, I'm thinking, all right, worm, like you can chill there, but don't be doing any weird shit while I'm trying to hit this putt. You know, it's kind of my mental agreement I made. And then I looked over at the worm and I thought, because I'm looking at this putt, 30, 35 feet, it moves a lot. Big old right to left, very fast. Thinking, all right, you don't move on the putt. You don't wiggle around. If I make this putt, I will forever refer to long, lengthy moving putts as worms, not snakes. You know, we always call
no
long putts snakes.
All right. What if you have a, like a 10-footer that like double breaks? You should call that a worm.
That's the worms.
And a longer one a snake.
The rodman. I'll call that a rodman. And then I'll call the really long ones the worms. So I make it right in the middle. And I looked down at the worm. I kind of gave it, you know, we kind of acknowledged each other and I walked off. But that was my moment of the day where me and nature had a moment. And I thought it was kind of a special one. So this is what happens when you don't have a caddy. And these are the things that go through your brain.
Yeah,
you go
to some dark, deep, dark places in that mind.
I had a quick idea before we get to flights. So you've kind of got the week off. You were in Nashville with Lacey. I know you guys had a great time. We had a really funny moment, by the way, you and I messaging where we realized we're very basic.
That was crazy.
Do you want to explain that?
Yeah, I literally was at my hotel and we went up to get a drink and, you know, I posted a picture and you messaged me and said, oh man, if you have time, go to the Thompson Hotel at their rooftop bar. And I said, I'm at the Thompson Hotel at the rooftop bar, like at this moment. It was very wild. I felt like I was immediately in the place I was supposed to be at that moment.
So I was thinking that we could just do a couple of questions, just generic questions, get to know the hosts a little bit better. So let me give you an example. Hey, Max, what's your favorite movie in the world?
In the whole world?
Yeah. What's your favorite movie?
Man, it's an impossible question, but it's like a flavor of the month thing for me. So, but probably my favorite movie in general is Remember the Titans.
Okay. Good Will Hunting is my answer. Okay. Good Will Hunting.
Oh, that's a great movie. You like apples? I like them. How about them apples?
Hey, what's your favorite golf club in your bag? Consistent favorite club, not flavor of the week. What's the one that you feel like throughout your life has always been your favorite club?
My three wood.
Okay. Okay.
By
the way, I've been kind of going home on my three wood lately. I've been very proud of my three wood.
Yeah,
I've been hitting it kind of like you. You know, when I switch to the wedge that's part of the wedge set, so like I have a Vokey pitching wedge, I love that club. Love the way it looks. It's so much different having the kind of the wedge made pitching wedge versus the one that comes with the set of irons, at least personally. So I go Vokey pitching wedge personally. What's your guilty food pleasure, Max? What's one thing you eat that you know is incredibly unhealthy for you, but you maybe have it once a week or once every couple of weeks?
Frozen Reese's Unwrapped, those mini cups. They come in that bag.
Keep them in the freezer?
Oh, yeah. You get them as cold as... Have you tried that before?
I don't think so. Reese's? I've had frozen candy, but I don't think I've had the Reese's one. I'm going to have to try that.
Oh, the game changer. They've even started putting in their commercials, like try freezing them.
have you thought about maybe just throwing this out there, maybe a sponsorship? Just, you know,
man, that'd lean be bad on for my body, but great for my happiness.
I think mine's pizza. I mean, pizza's maybe my favorite food.
You live near New Haven.
I know.
It's like the pizza capital of the world.
The pizza up here is unbelievable. I think we've talked about this. Have you had Greek pizza before ever? Have you ever Greek style pizza?
I don't think so. Peter would be pissed at me, but I don't think I have.
It's like, it's not thin and it's not deep dish. It's like in the middle, but it's not, it's just unbelievable. I I'm obsessed with it. I think I've never had an Arizona. It's been life changing moving up here. What's a song you think you've listened to the most in your life? Most plays in your life?
Oh my God, that is such a hard question. The most? Okay, you go first of all, I think.
Gotcha. I grew up in East Texas. You know, obviously I listened to a whole bunch of country. Shout out 93.7 Cat Country. And I was introduced to college rock, if you will, when I was still in high school. A buddy of mine came back from college and he introduced me to college rock and I fell in love. I'm like, well, this is cool. This is different and this isn't country. And he introduced me to OAR and Dispatch. And I was obsessed with Dispatch. I bet I've listened to The General by Dispatch, especially in those years of my life, more than any song that I've ever heard in my life.
Man, I know I'd have an answer for this, but I feel like it has to be like the Office theme song, probably.
But I mean, that's probably the answer. That or like the Friends theme song. That's a great call. That is a great call. Hey, Max, have you ever walked out of a movie?
I don't think so. I would not. I wouldn't waste $14.
I've only walked out of one. I walked out of McHale's Navy with my parents back in the day.
Never heard of that.
You should walk out too. What show are you watching currently right now?
I don't have one. I've been super jealous because Joe just watched Peaky Blinders, which is, I think, my favorite show on Netflix of all time.
Really?
So I'm jealous. I haven't had a show for a bit. I have been proudly reading a little bit more.
Proud of you.
So probably a good change of pace. But last night was the first night we watched TV that wasn't like sports in a long time. And, you know, we had to run it with Lacey. I had to run through all of like the Housewives stuff that we've missed. So I'm not really into TV like shows at the moment. I would like a new one, but that's kind of, unfortunately, I've just been stuck in a rut of trying to find something to watch.
Also been reading, which is good. We're plowing through that F1 show on Netflix.
Oh,
and
yeah,
we're obsessed.
I love that. That show's great.
It's so cool. Cindy loves it. I'm into it. We hadn't seen it. We just knocked out the first season. We just started second season last night. And so we'll keep it going. But
maybe that's what I'll do. I'll watch that second season because I love the first season.
Oh my gosh. It is so freaking cool. They're like rock stars. You know, again, being in America, you don't totally understand how freaking popular they are. All right, last one. What's a Max Homa specific house chore? Something you do that Lacey never does?
I love doing the dishes personally. I think I always did it with my mom and my sister growing up. My mom would wash, I would dry, my sister would put away. So I find doing the dishes like incredibly therapeutic. So, you know, obviously, you know, I don't do it always, but I enjoy doing it. So that's kind of my jam.
I'm trash and laundry. So I do all the trash, all the laundry. Don't get those mixed up.
I cannot stand laundry. I have to do it way more than I'd ever like to. It's not like, you know, like I do it, but if that was one thing Lacey would like to do instead of me, I think that would be like my greatest pleasure.
What's laundry like on the road when you're like 2-3 weeks in a row? Are you sending it off? Are you doing laundry yourself? Like, what's the laundry situation?
It's like the hardest thing about the tour life, like golf life, is if you don't rent a house, you know, you don't have laundry. Some tournaments are kind enough to do dry cleaning week to week.
Okay.
But not all of them do that. So finding where you're going to do, like at Valspar on Saturday morning, I had to do laundry to get ready to go to Wells Fargo. And Joe was staying in an Airbnb. So I went over to his house before our tea time and did my laundry. So it's like, it's always a bit of a grind. It's, you know, I either ask people if they are at a house, if I can come over for an hour or two, or you find that I've been to a lot of laundromats across the country. Sometimes you find those fluff and folds, but they're not as popular as I would have hoped. So that is the biggest grind, I feel like, for when you're on the road for more than a week.
So if you send, because I've sent laundry like to the hotel dry cleaner before. I mean, shorts are like $7. I mean,
yeah,
if you send your laundry there to do it at the hotel, it's like $300, right? I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I've never busted out my entire bag in there, but I've definitely had to throw a shirt and like a pair of shorts down there, you know, for the next day, just to have one pair of clothes. Right. And like, sometimes I'll do that and like buy myself some time. So like, if I throw one outfit down there and say, okay, tomorrow's the day I find the laundromat and get the rest done, I'm like incentivizing myself by like, you know, for almost putting my back against the wall financially. Like I'm not going to spend $300 on my laundry this week, so you better figure it out.
Last thing before we get to flights. Rory talked about the driver not being able to, or not drawing the driver anymore. He hits the fade. And he talked about the technology of it. Is this something that more people are doing? Is this something you're seeing more often now, the ball not really going right to left with the driver for the pros?
Yeah, Rory's probably the only... trying to think off the top of my head. Rory's probably the only top player in the last decade that draws the ball. I think maybe that's why we lean into him winning the Masters so much, because like, gotcha, he's one of the rare guys that does that. Bryson draws it, you know, I think pretty much primarily. But yeah, like it just, you know, I think back in the day, a cut was synonymous with shorter. And now with the technology, with the lack of spin, the cut doesn't go much shorter. Obviously, a draw is always going to go further on the ground, but the cut's not getting like spun up into the air nearly as much as it used to. So I just don't think that you actually kind of want spin these days. You try not to take too much off of it. Obviously, there's guys like JT who have really hit some really cool draws off the tee with driver, but JT primarily cuts it, and it's just easier now that we know that you're supposed to hit up on it. You know, drawing it and hitting up on it is awesome for optimizing distance. However, you're getting pretty damn close to some issues from that position. So if you can learn how to hit up on it with a cut, it's a lot safer with how like all the not only technology in the club, but how the advances everyone's made and understanding kind of the way a club comes into impact. So yeah, I mean, even like I get this excitement where, like at Tampa, I was drawing my driver really well. And that's why I played, well on some of these holes that I hadn't in the past, cause they kind of require a draw, but it's like the more I was drawing it, then I get the next week and my pattern's off because it just,
gotcha,
it's a lot harder to draw the long, long clubs. So it's just, it's kind of funny that, you know, Rory went to that now, you know, that's kind of, it's just like a kind of year 2021 safety blanket, is you could still cut it and bomb it in a game where, or in a day and age where bombing it is pretty much what everyone needs to do when they can. But I can't think of many people who draw it primarily off the tee. I mean, Scott Stallings does as a long guy, but a lot of the shorter guys will, because again, it's a little easier at a slightly less speed. But Bryson and Rory got to be the only guys I can think of that are that would draw it a lot. Obviously, Rory's talking about trying to do that less. So it's interesting. But I mean, look at Brooks, Dustin. I mean, these guys,
Rom,
they freaking send it and they hit a little cut. So I don't know. The thing about Rom, I'll say, Rom, it's almost always a cut. Like almost with most clubs, it looks like it's falling just a little right. But every time I've ever seen him hit a draw, especially off the tee, it is so beautiful. Like it's so tight. Like most people don't go from a cut to like a pretty draw. It usually kind of looks a little different. You know, you could tell. Yeah, you could see him flip it. His is like, Jesus, man, you really can do anything. It's amazing.
He's gonna be very interesting to watch at the PGA. I don't do like one and done pick thingies, but I basically decided I'm just going to pick guys that haven't won majors to win all the rest of the majors at this point, because it's just going to be so hard to win multiple. I wanted to take a quick break to let you know about our friends at Rapsodo. They do an unbelievable job with their mobile launch monitor. It's the only golf launch monitor that provides instant feedback with video replay, an active shot tracker, and data overlay. So let me just explain that to you. You're at the driving range. You're hitting balls into your net in your backyard. You're on the golf course. There's a device that you can simply set up, download the app on your phone. You put it behind yourself when you're hitting balls. It gives you video replay, and it gives you awesome information that helps you get better. You know how long your irons are going. You know how long you can hit driver when you go kind of normal swing. And then when you really go after it, when you want to get the fairway finder just to get the ball in play. And you're probably thinking this costs a ton of money, right? I mean, there's no way this could be affordable. Well, it is. It costs just $500. and they're currently offering a limited time discount. So now it's less than $500. That's how math works. If you visit Rapsodo.com, RAPSODO.com/grip, and use the code GRIP, you're going to save $50 right off the top. And the accuracy is within 2% of a $20,000 unit. So do all the math in your head there. All I'm telling you is it's a great deal for an unbelievable piece of golf technology that will help you improve. It'll give you more information, great video, easy thing to share on social media. And let me just throw out some stats of the week, considering what we just saw from one of the best in the world take down Quail Hollow at the Wells Fargo Championship. Rory McIlroy's driving accuracy the week was 33%. His average driving distance the week was 324 yards. This is information Rory knows, sure. But now you'd know information as well. If you pick up a Rapsodo mobile launch monitor, please do it. You'll love it. I promise you. Enjoy it. Set it up. Learn more about your golf game and have a little bit of fun doing it. Okay, back to the pod. All right, Flights, I have a dumb idea. I was listening to Shotgun Start Our Rivals last week. Brindley Romine was on there, and he told a story about Tiger hitting a guy in the head at the Walker Cup in 95 and it bouncing off his head out of bounds, which made me think, this is my dumb idea, at the Ryder Cup or the Solheim Cup, President's Cup, whatever, why don't a group of fans get together, get some super firm helmets, and they can try to headbutt errant tee shots into bad spots. They could get a name, like you could have a name, get like shirts made, like the helmet herd or something. And you get shirts made, you got these helmets on, you'd probably get on TV, but you're just running around. You're running around trying to headbutt tee shots. Thoughts?
I don't hate it, except for the fact that then you're going to get the same dumb guy with the helmet trying to bounce the other, like the let's say the opposing team's ball the opposite direction.
Okay.
And now we get into a... Now we get in a bit of a pickle.
Well, it's a dumb idea. I mean, it's not a good idea. It's obviously a terrible idea, but I was just thinking,
it's an idea.
A helmet about a play. I'm starting a new flight here called Dumb Pip Idea of the Week for you. And I have an idea that you offer a certain amount of money. I mean, people will take small in theory amounts of money to do ridiculous stuff. So I'm thinking you offer $5,000. For somebody to get a tattoo of you, okay? They get a tattoo of Max, maybe like when you won Wells Fargo, like the reaction there or something. And then you leak those pictures to some golf writer, golf media friends of yours. Boom, there's a story.
I mean, I don't know if that carries quite enough weight.
Okay.
I also do not condone anyone getting a tattoo of me. That's on Shane if you decide to do it. So please don't come back at me. I guess my only chance of this thing, at this point is I need like a school of children. No, I probably need like a couple statewide schools of children to like write to the PGA Tour and say, hey, I just want to let you know Max Homa is the reason I follow the PGA Tour.
Okay, I like that. Or
not any of the other 10 guys you would think of.
Gotcha. Like Max is the only reason I watch. So everybody listening,
if
you could please write a letter to the PGA Tour. They got a new headquarters. I'm sure you can look the address up and just say, hey guys, I just wanted to let you know this Max Homa guy, he's golf to me. That's it. He is the PGA Tour. That, sign it, Social Security on there, maybe throw a couple bucks in there, make sure they're very happy. It's visible. They see it, but that's a good way to support Max, right? That's fair.
Yeah. Again, I don't condone it, but I think that's my only chance.
Okay. I like that. I mean, Bieber gets a tattoo of you. Maybe that could be content, something like that. I'm trying to think of like the heavy hitters that do it. Do you have any flights?
Yeah. Speaking of Pip, I got this kid Armin on Twitter who 4 or 5 days ago tweeted me and said day one of me asking Max Homa to play golf with me, and I responded and I got like some funny interactions. So he's done this now for 5 days in a row. it's been hilarious. So it's the best thing I heard or read this week.
been very funny. At some point, I'm going to cave and play with him.
Okay.
Simply because I'm going to run out of excuses. But it's brightened up most of my mornings when I wake up and he tweets at me and I try to think of a way out of it. Kind of like, you know, you meet a new, you know, acquaintance that isn't exactly your friend. They want to go do things. Sometimes it's golf and you just don't want to play golf with that particular person. You don't want to spend 5 hours with somebody who's a relative stranger. So you try to like, so, oh, you know, my wife won't let me that day. You know, oh man, you know, I got a dentist appointment. So I'm trying to
book club,
trying to come up with things, but it's been really funny that the interactions have been great. As everybody knows, I like little stuff like that. I had a guy come up to me on, at TPC, yesterday, and I got my card and the first thing he said was, he said, "Hey, you going to play golf with that Armin kid?" I don't know. It just made me laugh.
I have a feel good Friday. I got a chance to play a golf course that you and I both love as much as just about any place in the world. National Golf Links on Tuesday. Shout out to Will Smith, not that Will Smith, but equally as cool. But I wanted to give a shout out to Tex, our caddy that day, veteran caddy, was double looping. But I've never had a caddy in my years of playing golf that was better at reading greens. Just fantastic. I stopped even kind of looking at the putts. I just kind of asked him where to go. So he was double bagging. So he had me and Will, who's my partner, we were playing a match. And on 15, Tex gives this read. Will makes like a 25, 30 footer for birdie that broke a whole bunch more than it looked like. And I announced that he was on caddy 59 watch at that point because he was so locked in for the day. But I mean, they're a good caddy that makes the experience just so much better. You know, it's just so much more enhanced when you have somebody that's like really into it, knows the group, knows when to say it and all that stuff. And Tex was awesome. So that's my feel good Friday.
That's exactly what I'm looking forward to with Bones. Finally having somebody I can walk around the course with. who knows what to say.
But are you and Joe, like, is this a big fight? Are you going to like start really like trash talking, Joe? Like, if you go out and shoot like 4 under in the opening round, like you should really drop a lot of, man, just having Bones on the, having this veteran on the bag, unbelievable moment for me personally, all that stuff. Like really, really kind of get a rivalry going.
Oh yeah. We have actually had a few funny things I'll tell on here. One, I have told him that when we win and then when he wins, I'm going to pick him up, him and Johnny up, his partner, and take them to Vegas. We'll all go, but Joe's not allowed to ever touch or drink out of the Wanamaker. and then we also
that's really good.
Where,
I like that.
Yeah, where we, you know, a lot of people have been giving him kind of grief. Not a lot. A couple people gave him grief, I guess, on kind of doing the four ball and not caddying, which kind of has been frustrating me because I told him he could. Like, I don't. Like, it's all good. Like, I don't. None of it. It doesn't bother me. So I don't like when people kind of
needle him.
Give their opinion on my life to Joe. Like, it's, you know, it's Joe's life. I wanted him to play the four.
Right.
Like, that's freaking awesome. You don't qualify for that like with ease. It's a big accomplishment. So it's been kind of annoying, but, one of the guys, I guess, gave him a pretty hard time and we were around and, I was around and he was like, you know, well, I hope, you know, to Joe in front of me, he's like, well, I hope you have a job, you know, when you come back. And Joe's like, yeah, me too. It made me laugh. I was crying laughing. I was like, yeah, me too. Fair. But no, it's like, no, I'm going to say a lot of dumb shit and like funny stuff to kind of like rile him up and like poke at it. But it's all in good fun. I love having Joe on my bag. I wouldn't trade him even for Bones. So, you know, even if we won, I don't, you know, Bones isn't trying to caddy every week, every, for the rest of the year. And I love working with Joe, but it would be really, really cool, if we won and I got to have this over his head, because at the moment Joe has 2 wins on the PJ Tour. And I have, or I'm sorry, he has 3 wins on the PJ Tour and I have 2.
Uh-huh.
He got one with Kevin. So if I had the, 3 wins and he had 3 wins, but one of mine was the PGA Championship, I definitely have huge bragging rights.
how is your golf game? I mean, obviously, I know you didn't play the way you wanted at the Wells Fargo, but you didn't see what I loved is even kind of the final round you know, when you didn't play the exactly the way you wanted at Innisbrook, like you didn't seem kind of down or disappointed. I loved your attitude about it. And even Wells Fargo week, you didn't really seem like you were kind of beating yourself up. I felt like you were kind of beating yourself up a little bit last year in terms of the way you played, and your attitude has just been so much better when you haven't had great rounds. What was kind of that experience week like, and how are you feeling right now?
Yeah, I feel good. It was like one of those, it's just, you know, hashtag golf. Like it just,
yeah, you just
got
have a day.
I played, I didn't play very well on, no, I practiced round on Tuesday for nine holes. I didn't hit it well, which was kind of a little bit, I guess, a jolt of like kind of, you know, I guess like some kind of worry. But then on Wednesday, I went out and practiced all morning, and like I didn't change anything, but you know, was hitting it really well. And sorry.
Hey, hi, Scotty.
And I was hitting it really well. And, you know, again, like just like back to normal. And then I went out for my pro-am nine holes and I just like didn't miss a shot. I basically like flagged every shot and I was putting great. So, you know, I wasn't like overthinking anything. And then, you know, just came out on Thursday. And I don't know if it was, I don't know, stuff just happened, you know, like it just, it got going sideways. I made double on my first and really only, you know, bad drive and a kind of a poor wedge, but I had more, it was more like the lie at wedge I had from the first cut. It was like up against the tall rough. So I really thought I only made one bad swing and then didn't get it on the green from this weird low area with my putter. And you just get off to this really bad start. And it's like almost, it's kind of like, you know, that's what you commend some players on when you get off to a really bad start, especially on a really hard golf course. It's just everything just feels immediately like you kind of get tight.
Yeah.
And it's kind of what happened. And I kept three putting and could not get the speed of the greens at all. Hold on, Shane. Let me just put you on hold. This dude has knocked on my door seven times. It's gotta be something important.
I hope that was the guy that's been asking you to play golf.
Yeah, that would have actually been hilarious. That was Armin.
Do you think if it was Armin, you would be hilarious, or do you think if it was Armin, you'd be frightened?
No, that'd be very frightening. I would actually need Scotty to somehow turn his attack on.
You'd be like, Scotty attack. Scotty's just looking at you like, nah, bro, I'm good.
Yeah. sorry, I'll start over. So just like I couldn't get the speed of the greens. Course was already playing like really, really hard. So it wasn't like you were just going to like, you know, start rattling off birdies by any means. And I just like couldn't find it. I played a little more, you know, I played kind of solid-ish on my back nine, but that front nine shooting six over right out the gates was just like, it was just a nightmare. But the game didn't feel terrible. I definitely drove it bad, which made it, you know, really hard. But then I came out the next day on Friday, it was blowing like a million. I was kind of glad I didn't play in a way super solid for those 2 days, because we got my wave had a really bad draw with the wind. It was windy Thursday morning and then calm in the afternoon on Thursday afternoon. And then Friday it was like super windy in the afternoon. So like, it was one of those weeks that felt like you were going to have to play some really, really good golf out of that wave to go. So it was almost good that I kind of never even, that never even affected me. but yeah, I came out the next day and I was like, okay, you know, if I shoot 3, 4, or 4 or 5 under, I might have a chance this thing. And I really did. I played well enough the first, you know, nine hole or eight holes to do so. I thought to get, you know, a few under early, but it just was everything that, you know, everything that could go wrong kind of went wrong. I struck the ball really well out the gates, and I was, you know, I missed a shorty on 4 for birdie, 5. I hit a good wedge and just like didn't get close. 6, I had a great 4 iron, just like wasn't getting close enough, wasn't making the long putts. And then 7 was like the epitome of the day and week, I guess. It's like it was straight downwind. It's par 5 that was playing like short, you know, shortest par 4, and I hit an absolute bomb on the middle with the wind, like 350 something like that down there in the middle of the fairway, straight downwind, bullpen, and I had a pitching wedge in this par 5, and I was like, all right, well, I'm gonna make a 4, probably make a 3, honestly, and it's gonna be all good. And it, on the fourth hole, I hit a pitching wedge. And with the same wind that flew 156, and that hole, the pin was 156, I think. So we're trying to land it about the same. And the one I'd hit before, I didn't really hit very hard. So I was like, all right, I'm going to put this thing in the air and really, you know, kind of smash it a little more to make sure it flies pin high. But I had a hole 8 yards short of the pin to carry the water. And I hit this pitching wedge and I flushed it, and
it's high and the wind, I guess, just died a tick because I'm staring it down. It looks like it's going to hop up there and be, you know, really close. And it lands barely over the water and hops back in the water. And I made par and it was just like, man,
that's kind of one of those moments where it's like that's it. Yeah.
That's the week, you know, and I obviously didn't play well. It's not like I'm saying I played well the whole time, but that just like kind of took it out of my sails. So, after that, it just felt like a bit more of a death march. But yeah, it was definitely upbeat. You're going to have weeks that just suck. So that felt like one of those weeks, but got back home, got back to work and game feels the same as it's, cool. it's felt. So that's good. It's just, I guess it's just different. Some weeks you leave and you're kind of like nervous about your game. And that was not really one of those weeks. It was unfortunate not playing well on a course. I was defending and love, but I also learned a lot about defending. You gotta say no a lot more to the things you do. But I was kind of stuck in the whirlwind first time doing it. It just was way too many obligations and way too much not practicing golf and trying to squeeze it all in. And although we spent probably an equal amount of time at the courses we typically do practicing and playing, I just felt like, you know, there's a lot kind of taken out of you that you probably didn't, you know, you're just not used to. So it's another, you know, kind of pat on the back to the top guys who do press conferences every week and have all these media obligations that I'm just obviously not used to.
Well, we're excited for PGA week. I mean, you're kind of chilling and then you get over there on Monday, I'm assuming.
So I'm going to go on Sunday cause we got to do testing. I'm getting my second vaccine, tomorrow, but, I still have to test, one more time before it's fully like settled in. So yeah, we're going Sunday so I could test early Monday and then I can, you know, I guess me and Bones could use a little extra time, not only on the course, but like together.
Cause
you know, he doesn't know my style. I don't really know his. So that'll be good. So that'll be good. I'm really excited. Majors are just wild. They're just so much fun. And I haven't really played well in one yet, but I obviously think this is probably my best, chance of late, minus, you know, I guess the Masters was a pretty good opportunity, but it's like my second kind of go at a major while I've been playing the golf I've been playing. So I'd like, you know, I kind of like that. I have a worst thing I saw, heard, by the way, Shane, you're going to see it on social, I think a lot, unfortunately coming up.
Okay.
But, I guess the, NCAAs are going on the regionals and the women's in particular. And today in Baton Rouge,
I saw this
video going around of, did you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really bad. This guy comes down from the NCAA and says the course is playable, but not championship caliber. So we're going to cancel it. And they just gave all the top teams, the spots, the regionals and the top individual players, the spots. And it's just, it's a shame. I wish I was allowed in these situations to say how I really feel fully about all these things, but I'll just leave it at, you know,
that sucks.
I don't understand how some people just seem to have all the say and things that really affect people's livelihood. I don't think that the backlash of the teams bitching and moaning about the course maybe not being perfect would be nearly the backlash that they would get for this. So not really sure the thought process that went into that, but I feel bad for those women, especially the ones that are seniors and won't get to have another crack at it.
Yeah. I sometimes you've got to in certain moments that, again, I mean, you know, bad weather, you know, COVID, all the stuff that we've kind of been, you know, that you deal with or that we've been dealing with, it can be really, really shitty for people. But like these are moments, you know, I mean, these are chances, opportunities, collegiate athletes, you know, an enormous percentage, most, if you will, don't go on to play a professional sport. And we've all seen those commercials. And so, you know, you're a senior and this is kind of your last chance to qualify for something you've never gotten to or get another opportunity or another crack at it. And to not even have that opportunity is something that, again, you just got to figure out a way. I mean, if it's rescheduling it or finding another golf course or doing something, people that want the opportunity to at least play versus just not even given that spot. So, yeah, that's not going to play well. I'll say that. That's not going to be something that's going to be well received. It's like that. Did you see the two little boys football thing that was rightfully ripped apart on social media as it should be? I know my buddy Joel Glatt did it service in terms of ripping the video and coaching and all that apart. But just remember, you know, there's cameras and don't be a horrible person in certain instances. Not to say that the college golf thing was a horrible person. It just maybe not the right decision. So hope you guys have a great week. I'm excited for PGA week, dude. I'm excited for Kiowa. I'm excited to see how you do. You want it to play hard and windy and nasty, right? I mean, you'd prefer that over super calm.
Yeah. When you play any tour events, you obviously just want to go. You just play with what you get with the weather and the
right.
course. You know, I don't think there's a lot of thought that goes into like hoping it plays one way. I mean, there's maybe a little, but
okay.
I feel like for the majors, you want it to be freaking hard, or
okay.
at least how they wanted it to be set up. So when you think of Kiowa, you think of the wind, you think of how demanding it is. So I want it to be the way that I've heard it would be, because that's kind of how I'm prepping. What Bones has kind of told me to get ready for, like, that's the stuff I'm like working on. So I want it to be like that, just so, just so you get the best winner, and you feel like if you go out there and you have had your prep and you execute the way you should, then, you know, you feel like you become a major champion in the right way, nearly, you don't want to get a ton of rain delays. You don't want bad waves. You just want everybody to go out there and have to battle for these majors. And that's what Kiowa seems to, that's what a lot of people say about Kiowa. So I'd be excited if it was, nice and windy and you hear about all these hard holes coming in where you got to hold on to close it out. So I'm excited for that. But I'm also, ready just to go see what the course is like. I can't even really remember watching it on TV. So it'll be kind of a new experience with the golf course. I'm very lucky to have, my Sherpa for the week will be, as experienced out there as anybody else. So that'll be cool.
I'm excited about it. Have a great week. Have a great week next week if we don't chat. I know major weeks are a little tougher with the podcast. If we can squeeze one in, we will. But if not, we'll catch up with you after.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Shane. Wash your hands, everybody. Have a great week.
Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.